I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to ride, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
This is your new world order. The ends and evil stack bodies, stack bills, steal power from the people. This the orchestra of war. Apocalyptic prequel. Halliburton, stay murky, golden bones, keep it legal.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. We now have two guests, which was the original inception. Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com is joining us now. Max, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Vinny. Nice to be here with you, Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, Max.
The amazing guitar player and filmmaker and talk radio guru that he is, but of course he doesn't believe in having a guru, which is why he's mine. and of course, Thomas Sheridan from thomassheridanarts.com, author of the book The Labyrinth of the Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, and now getting into the more spiritual and psychic aspects of it. But the topic for this particular segment, it might be a wee bit of a segue, it might be able to make it work, is the crazed feminism motif. I'm not sure if you fellas have experienced this. I don't think it's an easy topic to talk about, especially for three men on a alternative talk show to be talking about this, because we'll probably put off about, you know, maybe 12% of the female audience. I'm very sorry, ladies. This is nothing about what, can I define the distinction? There's a difference between femininity and feminism. There's a difference between women and feminism. Do you understand the difference? Feminism's an ideology. Being a woman is who you are. Right? It's not the idea of who you are, that's just who you are. Or at least that's my perspective as a man who's married and loves his wife very much and has a completely reciprocal love relationship there. And there's no cheating or any stuff going on. That's how I feel about it. And there is an element within here that I've seen this... The militant feminist that is almost like embodies everything that a man would ever dislike about himself transplanted into a woman's ego. It's just a deadly combination, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe I'm rambling on with this. Somebody please save me so I don't look like the rambling chauvinist all alone here.
Look, your militant feminism, that's an interesting way of describing things. I don't do isms, personally. I don't do any isms at all. I don't do ism. Feminism, I mean, what I see with feminism, I mean, women have been downtrodden so much in our society. They've been suppressed and brutalized a lot in our society for hundreds of years. And so they're attempting to make a stand to get some of their confidence or something back. But what feminism seems to do is attempt to turn women into men. You know, like if you want to be an empowered woman, you've got to put on a suit with shoulder pads and go out and rape the world the way a man would do. I think it's a bad thing. I think all people are equal regardless of gender, and I just don't do isms. So I think it's just another division, divide and conquer meme, you know. Really, that's all it is. That's all these isms ever are, you know.
I would agree with that too. To me, the same thing for centuries in the West as well. Women were, you know, they were subnormal citizens. they did not have the same rights as men. However, when feminism, and we call it radical feminism, the Gloria Steinem CIA feminism came along, it created a horrific division between men and women. Like Max said, a woman is not supposed to be a man in order to be equal. A woman should remain a woman. It's not a triumph for women's rights if she's climbing into a helicopter gunship and machine gunning kids in Afghanistan. That's not a triumph for women's rights. That's bringing them down to the same debased level that men have been subject to under the psychopathic control grid. However, I find rather obnoxious this idea you have among the sort of the elite of contemporary feminism, that a guy who's working down a coal mine is somehow oppressing a New York socialite for no other reason than he's a man and she's a woman. And that seems to be a growing mentality, particularly within college-based and university-based modern feminism. And they perfected the division and the schism to an incredible level at this point now, to the point where it's damaging women, I believe, more than it's damaging men.
Well, it's an overinflation of a thought process thing. Like, for example, if you feel objectified, and my wife used to do this until I kind of talked her out of it and tried to help her reason her way out of this this way that you kind of when you reinforce your own thoughts by thinking about it again and again and again and again and again over and over, what you do is you can wind up stressing yourself out ridiculously when there's no actual real threat or anything going on there. She'd be sitting at home worrying about where I am at night earlier, because, you know, I go out and I have a few drinks with mates and then come home, and I don't necessarily let everybody know what I'm doing, and I'm not trying to hide or anything if she sent me a text, but she'd call me up in tears, like in the first year of our relationship, and because that's what she'd been doing. She'd been sitting at home overthinking something, thinking about possibilities of cheating, or what if I'd been killed, or what if this had, and go way over the edge. And I did actually have to say to her, baby, that's not how to really think about it. Okay, think about how everything's been so far, the elements in the equation, known behavioral traits, things that are actually measurable and verifiable. Is it likely that the reason I'm home late is because I've been cheating on you, considering? No? Okay. All of these things get overinflated and turned into something they're completely not. This is something that I'm just noticing now.
When you're looking at things getting overinflated and turned into things that they're not, you look at feminism, you look at the basis of it, you look at what motivates people to do it, usually it's independence. Women want to be independent, they want to be strong, they want to be able to stand their ground like a man, but they always base their perspective on the economic model, this pathogenic way of thinking, this, you know, your whole life revolving around commerce. What is independence? It's being financially secure in the modern world. That is independence. And it's not independence at all. That's a fiction. It's all based on money, you know. So you've got to get out there in the corporate world and you've got to be a successful business person. This is an empowered feminine, you know, in the modern world. And it's not. It's simply a woman that's been taken away from her femininity. They've trained her to be a robot in the machine or to act like a man. Like you say, women getting into helicopters and gunships and shooting people with machine guns. This is not equality for women. This is degrading women, the creators of life, to the point that they have become murderers for corporations. They're going out and they're murdering on behalf of corporations. This is not feminism. This is not empowerment. And they're basing all of it on economics and commerce, you see. All of this stuff is always based on commerce. It's where you can get on the commercial economic ladder or where you can get on the social ladder. All of this is what it's all about. I've always said there are three main things wrong with society, three pathogens or pathogenic ways of thinking, three pathogens that infect our consciousness, which is the economic pathogen, the social pathogen, and the religious pathogen. These three things are what is responsible for all of this rubbish. And this is why people have got such a convoluted perspective of how to empower themselves, because they're basing it on these three things. It's got to fit in within these three parameters, because this is what our society is based on. So they've got a completely disjointed and unrealistic perspective of what they're doing right from the beginning, because they're not looking at it from a human perspective. They're looking at it from an economic or social perspective. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have noticed that, and one of the things that I find is, I don't know, maybe it's a bit sad and a bit of a low blow, but the very, very angry feminists that I've argued with on Facebook, YouTube comment panels and things of that nature, they're all single, unsurprisingly.
Well, look, people get very frustrated as well, and they want to lash out. They know the world's all messed up, and they want something that they can, you know, dispel their emotions on. They need a soundboard. They need something to scream at. You know what I mean? And you're it. You're you know, they can become a feminist. They can sit there and just basically be a rebel without a cause. They know they're angry. They don't really know what they're angry about. They know that their life isn't the way it's supposed to be, and so they'll put on men's clothes and stand there and scream with a megaphone about feminism. It's just a way out. It's a way of relieving that frustration. You know what I mean? People just got to do something, and that's something that they can do. It's hands-on. It's right there. They can actually do it. You know what I mean?
Can we qualify this? Equal pay in the workplace, a woman doing the exact same job as a man not getting paid the same amount, I don't like that. I think it should be that they should get paid the same.
Oh, absolutely.
If they're doing the same job. And then, of course, there's equal work hours and all of these other kind of things. Plus sexual harassment. That used to be common in the workplace. Men would sexually harass the women who were coming in, like during the coal mining industry way back in the day and stuff like that, when it was really, really nasty stuff that these guys were doing to these women. Absolutely agree with that. What I don't agree with is a woman trying to fight for the right to be a man when she already has the right to be a woman.
Well, yeah, but again, they're fighting for the right to be a man because they're basing it on usually a commercial perspective.
Well, and then of course we could talk about like gender roles and things of that nature. And what's happening right now is we have this whole transhumanist agenda where what it is to be a man, what it is to be a woman, indeed what it is to be human, all of it will be in question.
Max is right there about the pathogens. What's happened is, and if you want to be really, you know, really basic about this, is the control grid of these pathogens that Max has mentioned has already fucked up men, okay? We've already been destroyed by them. Now, modern feminism now believes that women should be equally as destroyed as men. Where if modern feminism was to stand for anything, it would say, we're not going to make the same mistakes and fall into the same traps that men have been dragged into by these economic Abrahamic religions, the social programming, the social mind control programming. We're not going to fall into it. But feminism, modern feminism, because of the very sinister individuals at the top, such as Gloria Steinem, a known CIA agent, have directed the movement towards the annihilation of women, incompatibility with the annihilation of men.
That's a very good way of putting it, Thomas. That's a very, very good way of putting it.
Agreed. And there we go. Another aha moment. It happens all the time when you talk to Thomas Sheridan. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ Mr. News Guerrilla Media, or just search Finney Eastwood and you'll be able to find out. And you to search up Thomas Sheridan. We have some great freaking shows of them, like stuff that'll blow your freaking mind. Max Egan too. There is a number of lengthy broadcasts that we've done, Max, which have actually quite expanded my spiritual consciousness to levels that I can't even comprehend. Now, here we are, three men talking about feminism, which to my mind is a great irony. And just like all the best things in life, they're usually a cruel irony. Because here we have it. I have, I don't know about you guys, but I'm married. And the reason I'm married is because I love my wife. I loved her so much that I couldn't bear being with any other but her. And since we've been married, ironically, as a lot of people claim, she comes into my office and she goes, "You know what's really strange, Vinny? Since we got married, I actually love you more." And I said, "Well, that's funny, baby, because I was thinking the exact same thing. It's sweet, it's gooey, it's disgusting. Love, you know. That's the kind of man I am. That's the kind of woman I love, one who loves me back. What I don't see in these militant feminists that I've been arguing with is the qualities that I like in my wife. Empathy, a willingness to listen, a maternal nurturing instinct, and a general scope of caring, right? Those were the elements of the feminine that I believe are, in fact, necessary for life itself, whether or not they're carrying a child, raising a child, or being somebody's best friend. Those are the things that women excel at, which men rarely do in a lot of cases. This is the divine feminine that I'm talking about, which is being destroyed, as Thomas rightly put, by feminism.
Well, yes, of course. And you know, militant feminists have always got a preconceived notion of what men are like. That's why they're like that. I mean, they don't view people as being individual. They view everybody as being the same. They categorize all men are like this, all women are like this. Well, some of them are maybe in two classes for women. There's those of us who are awake like me, and those are the ones that are on the way. But all men are bad, basically. They're all degraded, they're all this, they're all that. So they have a preconceived notion. So, of course, they're on the defensive as soon as you talk to them, which is why they find it very difficult to progress along that path or progress in relationships or anything like that, because they're instantly on the defensive. So that's just a natural trait, you know.
Well, see, when a man wants to charm a woman, he'll often try and make her laugh. And a feminist will say, well, what do you mean by that? You know, this is the thing. When you lose your sense of humor, I think you kind of, you've lost your mind.
Well, if you've got a preconceived notion with anybody, you know, it doesn't work. It's counterproductive. You can't have a preconceived notion. If you're going to enter into a conversation with anybody, you shouldn't have a preconceived notion of who or what they are. You know, unless you're just sort of there to having a hit piece, you're there to attack them. And what's the point of doing that? You know what I mean? You should always, you know.
Any contact I've had with, close contact I've had with any kind of feminist like that, is I always got the impression I was being watched. I always got being judged. I always never felt comfortable. I always felt like I was being watched and judged to see when I would fulfill a preconceived stereotype that I was supposed to fulfill because I was a man. This is inherently wicked, and this is something that people need to think about more. As you said, Max, they don't think of us as an individual. That would be like one of us being around a black person or a Chinese person or a Jewish person, whatever, and saying, oh, any moment now he's going to fulfill a stereotype. It dehumanizes. It absolutely dehumanizes the human being because you're ignoring their actual individual personality. And I always felt that whenever I was around a hardcore feminist, I was being judged. I was being judged and evaluated for the moment when I fulfill that negative stereotype of the men that they have.
You know, what you've just touched on there reminds me of all of the arguments that I also have with socialists.
Yeah, well, see, they all have a preconceived notion. Like Thomas just said, they have a preconceived notion and they've already got it there. They know that you're this way, so they're waiting for you to confirm their preconceived belief about you. Like you say, they're just sitting there judging you, waiting for you to take one step out of line so they can say, yep, he's everything I thought he was.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Good old cultural Marxism.
I love the irony of people judging you for being too judgmental.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
You know, you can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. Real life is probably the craziest stuff that you'd ever see in any movie. A lot of time it doesn't make sense. Oh my God! And then you get into the frustration thing, all right? Because it's sort of become less like I'm Luke Skywalker and the militant feminist is Darth Vader and we're slashing the lightsabers back and forth. But now it's more like I'm Lone Star and she's Dark Helmet. And when he comes at me with the lightsaber, I just, you know, I'm way taller and just hold the helmet down while he, like, tries to slash at me with a little lightsaber and can't reach, you know? Like a child trying to swing fists at you and you just hold their head. That's kind of like the argumentative technique that I see going on here. I've gotten past that frustration point of wondering why they're not listening to me, because I know. Because they already think they know who I am, and so they don't feel that there is any need to listen.
Well, yeah, you get that as well. But even with, I mean, people listening, depends on what you're talking about, I suppose. Are we still on the feminist topic, are we?
Allegedly.
Allegedly, okay. Because I found, like, even with like with all of this information, trying to bring information to people and trying to wake people up, it freaks them out. You know, when you try to challenge anybody's belief system, you freak them out. If you come on to anybody and say, look, here's what's going on, even with a feminist, if you try to shift her perspective or anything, it's not going to work. What you need to do is become friends with people. You know, even with all the information we're bringing to everybody about the global situation and the way people's minds are being molded and everything, the most important thing about it all is people. The most important thing is to break down the barriers with people. It's about friendship. Even with a radical feminist, if you become her friend in some way, do something for her, buy her a cup of coffee or just whatever, just do little things to help her along the way so that she realizes that you're not a threat. Break down these barriers so that she comes and asks you to borrow something one day or can I use your stapler or whatever, you know, like just create some sort of a rapport with people. That's the most important thing we can do with everybody. Get to know your neighbors, get to know people on a personal level as a friend. You've got to become friends with people before you attempt to shift their paradigm at all. Well, and that's what people are forgetting. They're meeting people and they're just saying, the world's all messed up. We're standing on the corner with a megaphone yelling out to everyone to wake up. They're just looking at you like an idiot. You've got to become friends with people. And then you can discuss things with them and then they can discover the truth for themselves. You can open a doorway for them of discovery so they can discover things for themselves. And it's the same with radical feminists. The only way to shift their perspective is to become their friend and to help them discover that there's a better way by opening a doorway for them so that they can find things out for themselves, because real truth is always realized. It cannot be told to anybody. Even with the state of the world, no one told you what the world was about. You realized it for yourself, and that's how you knew it to be true. And it's important that we do this with people, you know.
I found the almighty compliment. If you actually know somebody just a little bit, you will notice positive aspects of their character. And like, for example, a lot of the feminists I've met, aside from the criticisms that I've put up, they seem to be studious. They're very capable thinkers. They also seem to be active, and they're not lazy.
They're doing what they're doing because they know there's a problem and they've got to do something. They just don't know what it is. So they're doing what they understand. It may be the wrong thing, but that's all they understand, and at least they're trying to do something. So you've got to give them that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Credit where credit is due. And I pride myself on being able to give people really good compliments if I know a little bit about them and be able to praise their abilities and things of that nature. I believe everybody deserves praise, and I believe most people don't get enough praise for the things that they do. And I remember I was going to call up and be nasty to this one female host called Kerry Woodham here in New Zealand to talk about the Occupy movement and maybe 9/11 or anything. And I said when I came on the air, I believe that you give a freshness to the audience and a perspective that is rarely heard with reason and a fair say for all. And I just wanted to thank you very much for that. She goes, well, thank you very much. You know, and I was just like, yeah, I'm like airplane peanuts. Complimentary. And right then, I'd got her. And I managed to fill up a good 6 minutes of airtime with her on mainstream talk radio because I opened with a compliment that she really appreciated that was actually true. She did indeed bring a lot of reasoned statements to the airwaves, even if I didn't agree with half of the things she was talking about. She was at least touching on things that were of importance. This is about if you're looking at a hill and you think about all the crap and everything that's buried underneath the dirt, all that gold, all of those valuable resources, that's the reason why you buy the hill. It's not because of all the dirt on top.
Yeah, no, well said, well said. Well, it's good that you did that, and that shows. That's what I mean. Become friends with people before you attempt to challenge their belief system. Otherwise, they're just going to shut down straight away, you know.
And be honest, and be honest and be wise. You know, like you said, give them a compliment, make sure it's true. You're not just bullshitting them, that you're actually genuinely complimenting their attributes. And when you do open that door for them into this world that we exist in, open that door very, very slowly.
Well, you do have to care about people, don't you? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are Thomas Sheridan. That's thomassheridanarts.com. That's Thomas with an H. And also we have Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com. Or is it just crowhouse.com, Max?
The Crow House?
Yeah, it is The Crow House, yeah. And also thevinnieeastwoodshow.com is the website to go to download any more shows. There's also a search bar. I want to actually give people a specific instruction on this. Top right-hand corner of thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, there's a little place where you can search things. You can search pretty much any name or topic that comes to mind, and you can probably be guaranteed that I've either interviewed him or covered the topic. And if I haven't, and it's part of the billion things that I haven't done yet, please send me the information of the people that you wish me to interview, and we'll get them on the show eventually. And also check out our great sponsors, the books on there, the crowdfunding revolution, the new Ditch the Can line of stuff. Mate, energy drinks are bad for you, bro. I mean, so with like Red Bulls eating through the cans, so that's why they now have to line the cans of Red Bulls with plastic insides, which got BPA in them. And even the ones that say BPA free have just got worse chemicals than BPA in them anyway. Don't get stuff in the cans, bro. Yeah, click on the little Ditch the Can banner down there, plus the Gourmet Soap Kitchen. There's some amazing frickin' soap. Max, if you ever get the idea of ordering yourself some damn fine soap, you know, to scrub yourself, get some of that stuff, bro. It's a good idea. Very, very wise decision, I must
say. Mate, I live close to Byron Bay, mate. We've got so many beautiful handmade soaps in this area. It's phenomenal. It's incredible.
You know, you're spoiled for choice. And hey, you know the problem is? There was some kind of study where they gave children a choice of like 30 different chocolates or 2 different chocolates, and they rated their satisfaction level on whether or not they got the choice between 2 or 30. And they found out they were always satisfied with having less choices because they realised that they were only missing one thing that they didn't want, as opposed to missing out on 29 things that they'd thought about.
Yeah, that makes sense as well.
That's makes perfect sense, yeah.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, to give you more stuff that you just don't want to hear. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment here with Max Egan and Thomas Sheridan. TheCrowHouse.com is for Max, and ThomasSheridanArts.com is for Thomas. Whew! Okay. All right. We've gone through our list of topics ahead of time. So I wanted to ask you guys a little bit of something. When you put your head into the darkness, how much of the darkness comes back with you when you walk back into the light? How much bad stuff have we seen, and what kind of effect does it have on us? I saw this documentary one time, and this is totally random. It's not a literal connection, but it was about cannabis and the effect on the brains of teenagers. This is unrelated. And what they found was they did projections of growth in particular areas of the brain, growth in the frontal lobe and development and things of that nature. And they found that it enlarged certain areas of the brain and shrunk certain areas of the brain, particular things that will actually radically different have effects on their personality. And I thought about what if your experience and your trauma and things of that nature has a similar effect, hence saying that, oh, cannabis makes your brain change, etc., might be more like you have different realizations about the things that you're looking at because you've got a different, a third eye open or something of that nature. I don't know. What do you guys reckon about that? Do you think we're actually changing our lives as we speak? For every single conversation that we have, it's actually changing our physiology and locking in new personality characteristics?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you can change your neural pathways all the time. You know, you're constantly changing. And things like cannabis are an absolute changer. Things like cannabis open people's minds significantly. You know, you can get people, they say that when people smoke cannabis, they get psychotic because they become, they develop social anxiety and all sorts of stuff. What I think happens when people smoke cannabis is they look at the world and they go, oh, my God, what have we done? I can't swim in this anymore. And they actually become real and they want to go and live in the woods like everybody should be doing. You know, it actually wakes you up to the fact that this system is absolutely out of control and unsustainable. And it's a slavery system. I mean, that's why I think one of the reasons cannabis is illegal, because it makes people think about things a little bit deeper. Plus, it's a very, very healing plant. It's been our companion plant for centuries upon centuries. We all have an endocannabinoid system in our body. And when they outlawed this plant, we all started getting cancers and leukemias, and we all started getting sick. And I've personally cured people of leukemias, of cancers, of Lyme's disease, throat cancer, skin cancer, all sorts of stuff using cannabis resin. I use cannabis resin all the time, and I don't care who knows it. Yes, police, if you're listening, I use cannabis resin all the time, and I don't give a shit what you think about it. So that's just the way it is, that this plant should not be outlawed. I believe that the outlawing of cannabis is actually a crime against humanity, and any government that continues a prohibition of cannabis is a criminal government. Any politician that supports the continued prohibition of cannabis is a criminal and should be removed from office immediately. That's what I think about cannabis.
Putting my conspiracy hat on here about the cannabis thing, I agree with everything you say, Max. It should be legal. It should be available to everybody. But I'm a bit suspicious of why they're suddenly legalizing it everywhere.
Well,
me wonders if the synthetic stuff is being ready to be relaunched.
Yeah, the key word is legalizing it. So we don't need it legalized. They don't need to have any laws surrounding this plan at all. We need it decriminalized. It should not be outlawed. It doesn't have need to. You don't need to legalize the lawn. You don't need to legalize a pine tree. There's no legislation surrounding the couch grass on your lawn, is there? We don't need any legislation surrounding this plant at all. See, they're introducing synthetic plants hybrids, genetically modified plants, which is the same. It's all GM. GM cannabis is just as bad as GM food. So they're introducing all of this, and they want to, with cannabis, because it's coming out now into the mainstream, that it's got very, very significant medicinal properties. And what they want to do is they want to regulate. They want to legalize it so they can regulate the market. They want to be able to produce a cannabis healing tonic, which is going to be regulated. But you can't do that. If you're a cannabis user, you know that you get immune to specific strains all the time. You could have one plant that you're smoking or eating or ingesting, and it's working with you, and then after a week it doesn't do anything, so you've got to move to another one, because each plant has a different personality. So you can't regulate anything. If you regulate this medicine, it will lose all of its healing properties. So this is what they're doing. They're trying to sterilize everything and turn it into this whole medicinal type of thing, which will completely destroy the quality of the plant. Each plant is unique. It has its own personality, the same as each person, and they need to stop messing with it. And we don't want it legalized. We want it decriminalized. The government should just stay right out of it, and we should just be able to have this plant and grow it and do what we want with it. We don't need their regulations on it at all. And that's what this whole legalization bullshit is all about. Don't legalize it. Decriminalize it.
Well, in the broader sense, decriminalize it, not in the legal sense, which is basically just saying you're still a criminal and we'll give you fines and tickets and stuff.
Yep.
But yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I mean, yeah, you don't need to legalize your lawn grass. Why this grass? You know,
exactly.
The element here that I actually kind of want to introduce here is Thomas, who's been kind of silent in the background there.
specifically into what? Into cannabis or as the topic of like looking into the darkness as a whole?
Looking into the darkness would be preferable.
Yeah, well, looking into the darkness as a whole, well, I've been paying attention to this information a long time now. So I've been aware of how bad things are since I've been, you know, since the early 90s. Yes, you can be damaged. If you don't process the information with a sense of wisdom, you can be damaged by it, because I've subscribed to the Nietzsche idea that if you stare into hell long enough, eventually hell stares back at you. Or what Carl Jung said, if you go into hell and remain there too long, you will become hell. So it's always been very important for me to offset that with humor. I've been very much involved in writing jokes and having humor ever since I first got into this stuff, especially when I was dealing with the sectarian issues in Ireland back in the 90s. It was a way of rationalizing it for me, so I didn't have to think about it too deeply. So it's very important for people entering this world, this alternative world, whatever we want to call it, to go in there with a sense of balanced wisdom. Because what happens is, and I've seen it happen, people, if you go in there too fear-based, as Max says, you can rewire your neural pathways in a very bad way. It's like being in a cult. And you can have this kind of pathological negative feedback loop that actually has you in a state of perpetual paranoia and fear. At the same time, we have to look at this stuff. We have to stare at it. We have to evaluate it, because it's just like what Carl Jung said again. We don't create enlightenment by imagining beings of light. We do it by making the darkness conscious. So we have to look at the shadow, both the shadow collectively, individually, and at the collective unconscious level, because I'm a firm believer that at a subconscious level, the answers lie there, because we're all connected at that subconscious level. Yes. If you're going into this field, you're going into this work, be prepared to go through hell at times. It will happen. Find yourself being dehumanized by idiots on the internet who never met you, know nothing about you, and say the most appalling things about you, then make up lies about you. It will happen. But at the same time, too, you must hold on to your humanity no matter what. And when you can do that, and when I say humanity, I'm talking about your spiritual attributes, your ability to have a laugh, your ability to take the piss out of yourself, all these things.
Wearing a prosthetic face, eh, Max?
Yeah, no, that's important. You've got to be able to laugh. I joke around all the time. I have the blackest sense of humor with my close friends. Some of the Skype conversations and stuff that I have, you'd be horrified at the black humor in some of these conversations, because it's what keeps me sane. And it's like, yep, Thomas said, there is a certain amount, you have to offset it. But again, when you're looking at all of these problems, you've got to realize that it's an opportunity. All of this is opportunity. This is one of the greatest times in history, because this is the first time in history that the system has been laid so bare that we actually have an opportunity to fix it. See, if you've got a problem, you're never going to fix the problem until you know the problem's there. And knowing the problem's there gives you the opportunity to fix the problem. So knowing this system is the way it is, and knowing that this whole slavery system and control grid is coming down on us, gives us an opportunity to take the world in a different direction if we choose to participate in the world around us, you know.
Can I I've got a few things to say now in terms of manifesting and having a look at the problems. What I'm starting to get frustrated with is the people who go, "Don't tell us about the problems, tell us the solutions." Well, hold on a second, mate. If you're not prepared to look, if you're not prepared to understand what it is that you're dealing with, how the hell do you think you're going to be able to solve it by hearing about the solutions? Okay.
Well, when they're asking you for the solution, Vinny, what they're saying is, okay, but what do I do for someone else to be able to take the steps to fix the problem then?
See, what they're doing is they're appealing to somebody else to do all their thinking for them, to will them into action without anything. It's
to
like,
deliver the result is what they want.
Mm.
Yeah,
and they don't understand that this is the monomyth. This is a self-realized evolutionary journey. And there may not be an answer right now. It may not have manifested yet. And that's another thing, too, because people have been conditioned for this quick fix thing.
we're in, yeah, exactly. That was exactly what I was about to say, is we're in the instant gratification society mode. Don't tell me that there's a problem and that you're working on it. Just tell me when it's fixed, because I don't want to worry about it until I can be totally satisfied right then at that moment. I want a cigarette. Oh, here's a cigarette. How long do I want to worry about it finding a lighter for? Well, I don't want to worry about finding a lighter at all. Sweet, give me that cigarette lit up right now. Boom. That's the mentality of looking for solutions without actually thinking about the problems or where they actually came from, or the reason why there's a lighter in your pocket when it's not in somebody else's who for some reason has cigarettes but no lighter. That's what I'm talking about facilitating actual understanding of the situations, and then you work from the solutions from there on your own individual basis. How did you get here? Okay, how is everything working around you? How can I personally make a difference? Nobody can really answer those questions for you, not in their entirety. It will take you a long time to come to any kind of realization about it, because you actually do have to think for yourself, unfortunately.
Well, that's the thing. People have to think for themselves. And they have to participate themselves. See, people say, oh, you're telling us the problem. Well, what is your solution for it? They expect you to fix the problem for them. Okay, gee, I know this problem's here now, Vinny. Oh, that's terrible. What do you intend to do about it so I can have my life go back to normal without me participating in it at all? You know, that's the thing. Everyone wants an easy fix. Everyone wants to follow the leader. They don't want to take responsibility for themselves. They don't want to step into their own power, because like I've gone through it with people. Everything that we face, all the wars, all the legislation, all the degradation, all the environmental degradation, coal seam gas mining, Fukushima, the whole lot, it all happened because of legislation the government's put in place which allowed the corporate rape of this planet to occur. Why did that happen? Because we are disempowered. We are disunited, and we won't hold our public trustees accountable for their actions. So it's got to come down to the grassroots level. People have to change their individual perspectives of how they interact with the world around them, how they view people around them. Stop complying with this slavery system. Stop believing you are your name. Stop doing all of this stuff that people do, and wake up to yourself and start participating and respecting people. That's how we change the world. If people started operating from a perspective of respect and started performing according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, we'd change the world in a day. But people just won't participate. They want someone to fix the world for them. They don't want to be responsible for themselves.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Let's stop following celebrity Pied Pipers.
Exactly. And even with movements and things too, eh, Thomas? Now, let's join a movement. We'll join a movement. We'll join the Zeitgeist movement, and we'll sign the forms, and we'll go to the meetings once a month, and we'll get the DVD, and then the world's going to change.
Oh, dude, no, see, oh my God, I was just thinking about this the other day. Like, I used to film the Zeitgeist meetings and things like that way back in the day. I've never been a member of anything since I joined this movement to a degree, but what I found was they were all rich kids who'd never had a real job in their life, who are incidentally joining a movement which tells them that they'll never have to work in their life.
Yeah, and they're all over-intellectualizing anything. None of them are actually participating in the world that they live in. They're going, getting lectured to, getting told that things are going to be better. Well, hang on, you should be participating in the world. If you would participate and change your perspective, you could change the world yourself, you know?
They know nothing about the world, though. If you talk to the Zeitgeist folks, they know nothing. They have no life experience. They've all been raised in comfortable upper-middle-class homes. Everything has been given to them on a plate. And they simply talk about how nobody can survive in this world today, in this system. But all over the world, there are people who have managed to do survive in this system. All over, they've made their own lives for themselves without the system. They have no understanding of that. And it's very dangerous. I find the Zeitgeist movement quite frightening. And I'm kind of glad it lost its momentum, because it was starting to look like it was going to take over some real power, especially when they started hobnobbing with royalty and members of the UN, the leadership of the movement. And I'm glad it's lost its momentum, because it was made up of people who didn't really know what life was, yet they decided that a better life was needed.
Yeah, no, well, that's true. But again, you know, people they see there's a problem and they do what they can. They think, okay, well, we've got to find a way out of the problem. I mean, I'm sure there's probably elements of it that work. I haven't really looked at it, but there's probably elements in there that work. There's probably elements of the Venus Project. There's probably elements of all of these things which we could all look at if we. But even with all of these movements, I don't even think we need to construct a way out of this. I think if we changed our perspective, the way out would be an organic process. We wouldn't need to construct a new system. The new system would be constructed around our new state of consciousness. It would be an organic thing if we simply started operating from respect. You know what I mean? We don't need to construct any type of transitional period. It will construct itself, you know.
It will manifest itself, yeah.
Well, this is the reason why all these movements get people interested in them, because they show you one grain of truth amidst a desert of lies.
Well, it's people realizing there's a problem and they're trying to find a way, Vinny, is the thing. And I don't think that it's just I don't think they're necessarily constructed to show you one grain of truth and then hide it in this other thing.
No.
I think a lot of these people are genuinely having a go, you know?
Oh, yeah. No. And that's actually was my point, is because even when you start to have a realization, it's usually based upon one important truth that you've discovered. And unfortunately, there's a hell of a lot more to discover ever yet. It's why I'm kind of always evolving what I'm doing. Like, I don't have a clear goal in mind, like, oh, this is exactly how it's all going to work and whatnot. I'm just kind of like bumbling along a leaf on the breeze kind of thing. Now, going back to what we were saying before about heads in the darkness, we're coming to the end of the show in just a couple of minutes here. But the very first time when I watched a conspiracy documentary was Mike C. Rupert from thewilderness.com, The Truth and Lies of 9/11. I don't know if you've ever seen this presentation, but it's incredibly fantastic because you've got somebody who is a prosecuting police officer with commendations from the Department of Justice laying out a case for Bush and the criminal crime family pulling off 9/11 and running drugs and doing invasions, etc. And he says in this presentation, what I'm going to be doing is backing you into a corner, because there's a way that you present evidence to prevent any speculations, suppositions, and things of that nature, so that everything he was laying out became undeniable because he had all the documentation and evidence, and the way he presented it became like that. Now, here's the difference between how I reacted to seeing that information, unequivocal evidence that there is a criminal cartel in control of America, as each fact laid out, as each connection was played out, I started to laugh my freaking ass off. Not because I thought it was ridiculous, but because I knew that it was undeniably true. And doesn't the universe work in strange and wonderful ways when things are very, very true? Is that it's so crazy that it's hilarious.
Yeah, well I've had experiences like that myself.
That's why I do this, because I find it incredibly interesting. I just the journey has been phenomenal. I wouldn't change that part of it at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Thomas. I'm on my life's path. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I revel in it. I don't have bad days at all. None of this information gets me down one single bit. I find all of it empowering. I find information to be light, even if it's dark information. It's still light. It still bears light. And I love it. I absolutely love finding out how the world works, and I love the spiritual and conscious growth that comes with it.
Yep. It's true enlightenment, really. It's the way knowledge should be acquired, I mean, in that manner. You should enjoy it, understand it, accept it, and work with it. Work with it like clay or something, or an artist's palette. Like you said, I don't get bothered by staring by the dark stuff. I know that that gives me power, because I know that the solution, the light stuff, is the reflection of that on the other side. Easy.
Yeah. Exactly.
We'd be the most annoying employees in history.
Yeah, probably. I was never good at being an employee.
Questioning everything the boss is doing. Is this really working with the light side, man?
Yeah, but I love it. I mean, I don't have any fear of the system is the thing. I don't have any fear of anybody, because I know who and what I am. They can't kill me. They can't hurt me. They may be able to hurt this vessel that I am temporarily inhabiting, but they can't hurt me. Never. Nothing can hurt me. And this is all just an experience anyway. So, you know, I have no fear of anything these people can do. So, you know, I think that's a lot of it, you know.
The amount of information we put out at this point now are kind of bulletproof in that regard. It'd be pointless.
Well, yeah. I mean, they'd just martyr me if they hurt me. You know?
Yeah, that's
then,
exactly.
Then everyone would want to listen to what I said, and I really believe that if everybody listened to the radio shows that I've done and watched all my films, it'd change the world. So that'd be the worst thing they could do, would be to come after me. You know, it'd be
I revel in being a pain in the arse for them. I really do.
Well, yeah, I've always been a pain in the arse, Thomas. I got kicked out of 4 schools, and I was always a pain in the arse. So that's just me.
I got suspended 17 times in high school.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know how many times I got suspended.
I was never suspended once. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Are we talking figuratively or literally here?
Well, I was talking literally, but
what, suspended, like from the rafters? Like
No. No, like in lieu of a belt, I mean.
Yeah, I know. I got the cane almost every morning when I was in grade 6.
How old was grade 6?
Oh, not very old, only about 10 or 11.
Sweet mercy.
Yeah, every morning I got the cane in grade 6. Sometimes for not doing anything, the teacher would just get me up there during the day, say, get up here, and I'd go, what? And he'd say, this is for when you did something, I didn't catch it. And he just caned me. Yeah. He was cruel. He was a cruel bastard, my grade 6 teacher. But anyway, we're going back a bit there.
Well, this goes actually to prove my point, that high school is a form of trauma-based mind control.
Yeah, that was primary.
Well, yeah, that too. All school.
In my school, there was an awful lot of good-looking girls, so I can remember like actually enjoying going to school.
I remembered that part of it too.
That was selfish needs.
What was really a pain in the ass was when they got all uppity about the dress code. Yeah. There was a lot of things that you could no longer see after that. And that made school a lot more depressing, and because there were less things to distract you from the bedrudgery and servitude. Anyway, we've come to the end of another exciting and fantastic, spurting with warm intellectual goodness that came out wrong. And Thomas Sheridan's website is thomassheridanarts.com, and Max Egan's website is thecrowhouse.com, and you can go check them out both. And also, again, encourage you, go to the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and other than donating to support the show and checking out the few sponsors that we do have, go into the top right-hand corner of the screen of the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and there's a little search bar there, so you can search names, topics, etc. There's a lot of content. You wouldn't believe! I don't believe it. I can't even remember half of the stuff that I've done because I've done so freaking much. Please access it. I've documented it for years and years and years. There's so much knowledge up there, you won't believe it. And the YouTube channel as well. There's a link to the YouTube channel on the homepage at the top as well. And when you go to that YouTube channel, there's a little magnifying glass just above the first video that comes up there, and that's also a search bar, so you can search within my channel for videos and topics and people that I've interviewed as well. I've got to figure out some kind of a way of cataloging, etc., but I just don't know how as yet. Anyway, Thomas, Max, wonderful to have you here. We've kind of run out of time, but if you want to have like a 30-second, you know, last thing to say, Max, do you want to go first?
No, I'm good, Vinny. It's nice to be on. Nice to talk to Thomas again, mate. I'll see you when I get to Ireland.
Same. Likewise, it's great talking to you after a while, Max, and thanks for bringing us together, Vinny. And when you come back to Ireland, I'll see you, and I might even be seeing you in Australia at some point. So I've been asked to go there. So happy days ahead for everyone.
Yeah. The Vinny Eastwood Show. It's like wheat. It brings people together. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.